Kendrick, VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
This is what you will hear on today's program. Brian Lynn has a report on an ancestor of modern-day mammals. Researchers have some surprising findings about the animal's brain development. Anna Mateo and Andrew Smith report on the health dangers of too much heat. When temperatures are high, heat must be respected to protect health. Andrew Smith and Jill Robbins bring us today's lesson of the day. They talk about polite ways to disagree. But first, this.
The United States Supreme Court on Monday ruled that American presidents have immunity from prosecution over what the ruling calls official acts. The ruling recognizes, for the first time ever, any form of presidential immunity from prosecution. The decision was 6-3. The ruling also declared that presidents do not have such immunity for unofficial acts. The decision is critical to a criminal case against former President Donald Trump on charges of plotting to overturn the 2020 presidential election results. The Supreme Court said the first step is to distinguish his official from unofficial actions. The ruling directs a lower court to re-examine whether the charges are related to official or unofficial presidential actions. In a social media post, Trump cheered the ruling. It read, "Big win for our Constitution and democracy. Proud to be an American." Special Counsel Jack Smith's office, which oversees the case against Trump, did not provide comment on the ruling. Smith's office accuses Trump of 4 crimes: plotting to defraud the government, blocking an official meeting of Congress and plotting to do so, and threatening people's right to vote. The charging document, called an indictment, said the former president tried to get Justice Department officials to support his claims that widespread fraud had kept him from winning re-election. It said that Trump and others pressured state lawmakers to provide false results through false electors. It said Trump pressured then-Vice President Mike Pence to block or delay certification of Joe Biden's victory as Congress considered the final vote count at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. In the months following the 2020 election, Trump lost several court cases in which he claimed he was cheated out of re-election to a second 4-year term. Before the Supreme Court, Trump claimed presidential or executive immunity for his actions. He said he acted to protect the integrity of the election. Trump's lawyers argued that his actions sat at the heart of Trump's official responsibilities as president. The defense said a president would be immune even if they used military forces to murder a political opponent. The Supreme Court decision makes it unlikely that the case against Trump will be tried before the 2024 election. And Trump and Biden will likely face each other again when America votes on November 5th. I'm Katie Weaver.
Researchers say a new study on an ancient pig-like animal is helping them learn more about brain development in mammals. The animal is known as Gordonia. It is believed to have lived more than 250 million years ago in what is present-day Scotland. Back then, Scotland was part of a sandy desert. Today, it receives a lot of rain and enjoys four seasons. Gordonia was known as a proto-mammal, a predecessor of mammals. The creature lived during the Permian period. Some proto-mammals kept some qualities of their reptile ancestors. An international group of researchers used high-quality 3D imaging equipment to examine a Gordonia fossil. This permitted the team to make a digital copy of the animal's brain. The researchers said this led them to learn new details about the size and shape of the brain in early mammal development. The team recently released their findings about the fossil in a study published in the Zoological Journal of the Linnean Society. The lead writer of the study was doctoral student Haiti George, who attends Britain's University of Bristol. She told Reuters news agency, "Overall, Gordonia's brain looks more like a reptile than a mammal, despite it being more closely related to us than any modern living reptile." The researchers noted that the animal's brain was very different from those of modern mammals. However, the size of its brain compared to its body seemed to suggest the beginning of gains in intelligence seen later on in mammals and humans. George said the front of Gordonia's brain, called the forebrain, is comparatively much smaller than any other mammal. Another leader of the research was Steve Brusetta, a scientist at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. He told Reuters the brain the team studied was not as circular as a human brain. Rather, it is shaped more like a long, arched tube. Brusetta noted that upon close examination, the researchers realized the animal's brain was pretty big compared to the size of the body. He added that it is difficult to measure intelligence in modern-day humans, so it is even more difficult to measure this in long-disappeared animals. But we can at least say generally that it would have been a smart creature for its time, Brusetta said. The researchers estimated Gordonia was about 1 meter long, weighing 20 kilograms. The animal's head was tall and wide, with a pointed mouth and tusks to help it eat desert plant material. It had a pig-like build, but its legs were not as long as a pig's, they noted. Gordonia belonged to a group of proto-mammals called Dicynodonts. The group survived the worst mass extinction in Earth's history 252 million years ago at the end of the Permian period. I'm Brian Lynn.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. As temperatures and humidity rise outside, what happens inside the human body can become a life or death situation. And a difference of just a few degrees can mean living or dying. Researchers say the danger point outdoors for illness and death from ongoing heat is lower than experts once thought. This discovery comes from new information, including putting people in hot boxes to see what happens to them. We will talk about this process later in the story. At rest, the body's core temperature is about 37 degrees Celsius. That is only 4 degrees Celsius away from possible death from heat stroke. Several doctors and other experts explained to the Associated Press what happens to the human body in such heat. Ollie Jay is a professor of heat and health at the University of Sydney in Australia. That is where he runs the Thermal Ergonomics Laboratory. Jay explains that heat kills in three main ways.
Usually, the first way is heat stroke. This is a severe increase in body temperature that causes organs to fail. When the inner body gets too hot, the body redirects blood flow toward the skin to cool down. But that sends blood and oxygen away from the stomach and intestines. This can permit poisons normally found in the stomach and intestinal areas to get into the blood. Jay said this leads to organ failure and death.
Number two is the bigger killer in heat, pressure on the heart. This is especially true for people who have cardiovascular disease. The danger starts with blood quickly flowing to the skin to help reduce body heat. That causes blood pressure to drop. The heart reacts by trying to pump more blood to keep you from passing out. Jay said you're asking the heart to do a lot more work than it usually has to do. For someone with a heart condition, he compared this situation to running for the bus with an injured leg. Something is going to give, he warns. Dr. Neil Gandhi is emergency medicine director at Houston Methodist Hospital in Texas. He said during heat waves, anyone who comes in with a fever of 37.7 degrees Celsius or higher and no evidence of infection will be checked for heat exhaustion or the more serious heat stroke. Gandhi said he often sees temperatures greater than 40 to 40.5 degrees Celsius during extreme heat events. Another degree or three, and such a patient is at high risk of death, he added.
The third way heat kills is by lack of water in the body, or dehydration. As people sweat, they lose liquids to a point that can severely hurt kidneys, Professor Jay said. He added that dehydration also reduces blood flow and worsens cardiac problems. Renee Salas is a Harvard University professor of public health and an emergency room doctor at Massachusetts General Hospital. Dehydration can be very dangerous and even deadly for everyone if it gets bad enough, Salas said. But it is especially dangerous for those with medical conditions and on certain medications, she added.
Heat also affects the brain. It can interfere with thinking and reasoning. Chris Ebi is a public health and climate professor at the University of Washington. She said one of the first signs that heat has become dangerous is mental confusion. However, the person suffering from the heat is unlikely to see it, she said. This becomes a bigger problem as people age. Many people may not realize their danger, Houston's Gandhi said. Dehydration can progress into shock. This causes organs to shut down from a lack of blood, oxygen, and nutrients. One definition of heat stroke is having a core body temperature of 40 degrees Celsius, combined with mental confusion and difficulty thinking, said Pennsylvania State University physiology professor W. Larry Kenny.
Some scientists use a complex measurement tool called wet bulb globe temperature. It records humidity, solar radiation, and wind. In the past, it was thought that a wet bulb reading of 35 degrees Celsius, or 95 degrees Fahrenheit, was the danger point. Kenny also runs a hot box laboratory and has done nearly 600 tests. He said his tests show the wet bulb danger point is closer to 30.5 degrees Celsius. And that temperature is for young, healthy people. For older people, the danger point is a wet bulb temperature of 28 degrees Celsius, he said. He adds that the amount of moisture in the air, or humidity, plays a big part. Humid heat waves kill a lot more people than dry heat waves, Kenny said.
Heat stroke is an emergency. Medical workers try to cool a victim down within 30 minutes, Salas said. She's the professor and emergency room doctor in Massachusetts. The best treatment is a cold water bath. But Salas said that those baths are not always available. So emergency rooms pump patients with cool fluids intravenously, apply cold water to the skin, put ice packs in armpits and groins, and place them on a cold mat with cold water running inside it. However, sometimes all these treatments do not work. Experts call it a silent killer. You do not see the damage happening.
Much of the United States, Mexico, India, and the Middle East suffer through extreme heat waves. These heat events are worsened by human-caused climate change. Climate change made a killer heat wave in Mexico and the Southwest U.S. even warmer, and also made it 35 times more likely to happen more often.
Extreme heat in India has killed more than 100 people in the past 3.5 months. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
And now, the lesson of the day.
Hello, my name is Anna Mateo.
And my name is Andrew Smith.
My name is Jill Robbins. You're listening to the lesson of the day on the Learning English Podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our video series, Level 2 of Let's Learn English. This series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
Today, we're going to talk about Lesson 4, when Anna and Pete go to see a circus. They show us some ways to politely disagree and state our opinions.
As you may remember from our previous podcast, Ms. Weaver had asked Anna and Pete to do a new program where they give different opinions on a topic. We can listen to the beginning of that program as we start Lesson 4.
Hello, I'm Anna.
And I'm Pete. Welcome to He Said,
She Said.
Because there are always two sides
to every story. Today's show is about circus arts.
Circus? That's not an art form.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
I think Pete and Anna have different ideas about what an art form is. But we don't know what they are yet. They are disagreeing in a very simple way, as we heard.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Kind of a boring way to disagree. In this lesson, we learn about some more interesting ways to disagree by politely giving your opinion and supporting it with examples.
So let's listen to how Pete supports his opinion.
Recently, I went to a circus festival. There was a huge circus tent and many different circus performers. It was a celebration of circus arts.
That looks fun, Anna, but I don't think circus performers are artists. I think they're athletes with interesting skills and costumes.
Pete supported, or we might say backed up, his opinion with more information about the circus performers. He is giving a reason for thinking the way he does. This is an important point for English learners who want to develop their writing and speaking skills. When you give an opinion or argue a point, you should provide support for that opinion.
And when you have a different opinion, you can choose to politely say a different opinion, the way Anna does.
That is a very interesting point of view, Pete, and I completely disagree.
And back to supporting your opinion, there are several ways. One is to state facts. Pete says the performers have skills and wear costumes.
You can also support your opinion with statistics or numbers. Another way is to give examples. Listen to how Pete continues to support his opinion.
Anna, Michelangelo was an artist. Rembrandt was an artist. People who swing from ropes are not artists. I know it's not easy to swing from a bar and catch someone by the hands. You have to be very athletic to do that.
What do you think, listeners? I believe he's giving some examples of people he considers artists. Then he gives an example of an athletic activity, swinging from a bar and catching someone.
You may have noticed that Pete mispronounced the names of the artists Michelangelo and Rembrandt. That's a way of showing that Pete really might not understand very much about what makes something artistic or what makes someone an artist. When you're having a disagreement, as Anna and Pete are here, it's important to listen to the other person's argument and see if you can find some point of agreement. Do you think Anna will do that? Let's listen.
That's a good point, Pete. They are athletic, but they are called trapeze artists. Trapeze artists.
I hear what you're saying, Anna, I do, but where is the art?
Look at these guys. They're jugglers.
Yes, they are skilled in the art of juggling.
They have a special skill, but are they artists? No.
Yes.
They're just throwing things back and forth.
Kind of like you and me, Pete. We're going back and forth on this issue.
I don't think we'll ever agree on this one.
No, but we can agree that these young people are amazing.
Okay, yeah, we can agree on that. But still, they are very athletic, flipping and throwing each other around.
Yes, I agree with you on that point.
Notice that Anna said, "That's a good point," to show she is listening to Pete's argument. Pete and Anna are still going back and forth with the art question, but they both think the young performers are amazing. And Anna tells Pete she agrees in this way.
Yes, I agree with you on that point.
When you have a disagreement with someone, it's sometimes helpful to get a third person involved. We find that one of the circus performers has an idea to support Anna's opinion.
You know, Pete, let's let the performers speak for themselves. Kate and Piper tell stories while hanging upside down on a ring.
Was it hard to interview them upside down?
I interviewed them right side up, Pete. Kate says circus performing may be athletic, but it's not competitive. With most sports, you compete.
It's an art form because, like other sports, you're competing. This is simply performing and having fun.
Okay. Kate made a really good point. In athletics, there's a lot of competition. But still.
Here's Piper, Pete.
Well, when you're up in the air doing circus, you have to perform. And so we learn to embody characters and to move fluidly and gracefully in artistic ways.
And that is why they are artists.
You're right, Anna. Oh, you're right. It's just so beautiful.
I know. I know, Pete.
Pete is seeing from Anna's point of view, I think, with the help of Piper and Kate. It seems one important difference they see is that athletes are competing while the performers are having fun, not trying to do their performance faster than others, for example.
It's an art form because, like other sports, you're competing. This is simply performing and having fun.
Yeah, and the other difference is that the circus performers are becoming a character. Essentially, they are acting.
Well, when you're up in the air doing circus, you have to perform. And so we learn to embody characters and to move fluidly and gracefully in artistic ways.
That may be a new word for you. Embody. It's spelled E-M-B-O-D-Y. It means to give form to an idea, like when you make a symbol or an example of something. Here, Piper is talking about expressing or becoming a character.
I think it's time for us to give our listeners their assignment for this lesson. Choose a topic that people are talking about where you live, or pick one from our activity sheet in Lesson 4. Write to us with your opinion on the topic and support it with at least two reasons: facts, statistics, or examples.
You can email us at learningenglish@voanews.com or put your comments on our YouTube video for this podcast. And it'll be great if you share the lesson of the day with your friends and family. Remember that you can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks for listening. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today.
Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mark.